Welcome to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. To join the conversation, call 508-871-7000. Now, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good morning, New England. You're tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN. Did you remember to set your clock ahead? Because it is 10:06 and 37 seconds, not 9:06 and 37 seconds. That distinguished man right across from me, that's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston, and we're going to get right to it because we've got a busy program here today. We're very honored to have the great Grover Norquist, president of America's for Tax Reform, join us on the phone. Good morning, Grover. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well, and I did remember to spring forward.
So yeah, it's good that you did. Hey, it's good to have you back on New England Radio. You're a native of New England, is that correct?
Absolutely. Lexington, Weston, Cambridge, Boston.
Fantastic. So great. Thanks for taking a couple minutes to join us. We've got so many questions for you. Terry Hendricks, our co-host here, is writing a piece for the Boston Globe talking about tax override because it's town meeting season here in New England and tax override season. I'm going to turn that over to Terry.
Yes, the article will be in next Sunday's Globe in the West section. And, you know, in Ashland, they are looking to do a Proposition 2.5 override. Now, in Ashland, we've never had one pass. But it looks like about every 10 years they try. But there are a lot of people looking to add about $2.5 million to our tax bill every year. And it comes at a time where still, you know, the economy is not what it should be for various reasons, as you know. And of course, they say, well, we're going to increase the subsidy to the seniors. And, well, the problem with that is then the people who are saving for their kids' college or maybe their kids are about to go to college just have a higher tax bill, and they're also looking to raise water and sewer. And so, you know, every time we turn around, we're getting, you know, our pockets picked.
And there's nothing permanent about that subsidy. It may well last as long as it takes to buy somebody's vote or trick them into voting against their own interests. Proposition 2.5, I believe, and Citizens for Limited Taxation, which led the fight, I'm so pleased that Massachusetts has a tax group like Citizens for Limited Taxation because not all of the 57 states do. thank you.
You're too close to D.C., are you?
Well, hey, look, the president says so. I'm not going to, you know, question it. But actually, somebody corrected me and said he said he'd been to 57 states and there were three more. So everybody remembers 57, but he actually implied said that there were 60. So when asked to give a number, he was off by 20%.
Well, that's interesting. I guess some of these people really aren't from Earth.
It sounds like that's how the federal government does their budget, off by about 20% usually. But, hey, I'm a proud member of – I've signed CLT's pledge, and I'm a proud that I've done that. Chip Faulkner and Barbara Anderson have done great work here in Massachusetts, so thanks for that shout-out. But
they absolutely have, and this is look, you're right. We need to stop these overrides, and I understand that CLT's working on a project for underrides so that, hey, if you want us to be able to vote to go above – we ought to also be able to have votes to say, you know, less.
Well, our neighboring town of Hopkinton has actually had $1 million underwrite
just last year.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, it's rare. It's rare here in Massachusetts. Some people call it Taxachusetts. But there's another thing going on in the State House. They're looking to change the tax structure in Massachusetts, the state income tax, and they want it to be more like the federal tax where it's very progressive, but the Massachusetts Constitution says basically the tax is, you know, equal for all. In other words, the same percentage. So there are some people looking to again pick the pockets of those filthy rich that only do things like provide jobs and innovation, things like that.
I have always been pleasantly surprised, but somewhat surprised, that Massachusetts, home to the Kennedys, Deep Blue, George McGovern, has five times had on the ballot, because the big spending interests have put, let's go to a graduated or progressive tax structure. Five times they've put that on the ballot, going back to 78, I think, with the so-called grad tax. And five times Massachusetts has voted it down with a very sophisticated argument, which is, oh, yes, year one, they'll only tax the Kennedy, the rich Kennedy kids and stuff. But once they've done that and they come back for everybody else, the Kennedys are not going to protect us. They'll go, you already raised tax on us, so why not everybody else? And the politicians will divide Massachusetts taxpayers into different groups, like the Washington politicians do. They're a series of different tax rates, and then they mug us one at a time. Bill Clinton said, I'm only going to tax the top 2%. Remember that? And as soon as he did tax higher income people, he then turned around and raised gasoline taxes on everybody, tried to raise, have an energy tax, but he just did, got gasoline. So he, when politicians say they're going to tax the rich, they haven't finished the sentence. We're going to tax the rich first, and then we'll be back for you at a graduated or progressive income tax. Something other than a single rate tax allows them to mug us one at a time. This is the Richard Speck theory of tax increases. If you remember the gentleman from Chicago.
Yep.
If you can't take on everyone in the room at once, you take them out of the room one at a time. We want the politicians to have to face us all together, not one at a time.
You're tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830. We're talking with Grover Norquist, President of Americas for Tax Reform. Grover, the presidential candidacies are dominating the news. Of course, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders are getting most of the coverage. What are your thoughts? What are your concerns? And most importantly, who's our fiscal conservative running? Because I can't identify one yet.
Well, that's a good question. My candidate, Scott Walker, has taken a temporary step back, but I'm pretty sure he'll come zooming back in towards the end of this race. But if not...
Do you have any breaking news there?
No, just high hopes.
Yeah. Well, we all have some high hopes, but...
I mean, the guy who tamed Wisconsin and got elected three times in a four-year period, geez, you know, more shots on goal than anybody's ever taken, and he stopped them all. Very, very impressive. And I was disappointed that he was not at least one of the front runners, if not the nominee. Look, we have four guys still running, Trump, Cruz, Kasich, Rubio, and I stood in line for 2.5 hours yesterday in Washington, D.C. for the Republican primary, so we are seeing about a 50% increase in Republican turnout in primaries and caucuses, and a 30% decrease, this is from 2012, a 30% decrease on the Democrat side, which is odd because 4 years ago it was just Obama, right? So why vote?
Right.
This time you got two people running, and they're both, if you're a Democrat, kind of interesting. And the turnout is down. So I think that says helpful things about who is excited about their candidate. You asked about economics. On taxes, all of the Republicans running for president, going back to when there were, you know, 1,200 of them about a year ago, they all made a commitment never to raise taxes. They all came out with tax plans that were very pro-growth, low rates, territoriality, full expensing for business investment. They would double, every one of those plans would double the rate of growth from Obama's 2%, which is what France averages, 2% a year, to Reagan levels of 4% a year. So that... all the tax plans, they're all a little bit different as far as I'm concerned. They're pretty much the same in a good way. In a good way, they're pretty much the same. I know it hurts their feelings because they each have such pride in their own specific pieces of that. But this is the healthy thing about the modern Republican Party. There are all sorts of challenges. But the healthy thing is they get, take rates down, don't tax the same dollar more than once, and keep rates low. They understand that the problem we have in this country is economic growth. We have weak economic growth. That's why people get mad at the Chinese or the Mexicans or something else. You know, there have been Chinese and Mexicans in trade before, but when you had 4% growth, it wasn't a problem. At 2% growth, everything looks miserable and makes you grumpy, and you're trying to find out what it is. And the answer is we have lousy growth because our tax policies and our overregulation, slow growth, kill jobs. And it's not something some other country's doing to us. It's our politicians shooting us in the foot.
Well, there you go. We're speaking with Grover Norquist, President of Americas for Tax Reform. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to pick up that topic and talk a little bit more about the economy and how hopefully we can get the economy growing. You're tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN.
You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good morning, New England. It's 10:18. Check those clocks to make sure you sprung ahead. You're tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN. That distinguished man sitting across from me, that's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston. And we have the honor of having Grover Norquist, the president of Americas for Tax Reform, joining us on this Sunday morning. Mr. Norquist, I am deeply concerned that we are overtaxed, we are overregulated, and you indicated that right before the break. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton get into office. What does the future of America look like for our children?
Well, it looks like the same trajectory we've been on for the last 8 years. Although I would divide that into three periods. The danger is a Democratic House of Representatives, a Democratic U.S. Senate, a Democrat president that can change the laws of the country, as they did with Obamacare, as they did when they, in effect, nationalized big banks at the expense of little banks, smaller banks. And then the Republicans won the House of Representatives thanks to the Tea Party movement, which just brought millions of new voters in and said, stop spending so much. And it changed the nature of the modern Republican Party. They got the don't raise taxes. Okay, I run the no tax increase pledge with Americans for Tax Reform. 90-95% of Republicans take the pledge. It's a very helpful tool for people to be able to turn to the spending interest and say, you know, I love you, but I can't raise taxes. Sorry, go away. And as long as the Republicans have had the House, the Senate, or the presidency since 1994, taxes have never been raised. So there was a 16-year period with no tax increases from 93 to 2009, when the Democrats had it all in 1993 and in 2009. Then they raised taxes. So if Hillary gets in, but we hold the House and the Senate, and keep in mind, presidents are nice, presidents are helpful. Presidents can get you into wars you might wish to avoid, but presidents don't spend money. Congress spends money. Presidents can't raise taxes. Congress raises taxes. A solid Reagan Republican House and a Reagan Republican Senate can stand up against a lot of abuse from a big spending president and reduce the damage that can be done. And that's where I think we have real opportunity. Second, let's elect the president who'll sign good bills. But if we get a bad president, we're going to have to go into defense for at least 4 years. And that means people are going to have to be focused on their House candidates, their Senate candidates, not just the presidency. I'm old enough to remember Reagan got elected and a whole bunch of good conservatives, well-meaning people said, okay, now I get to retire. Now I don't have to do anything in politics. Reagan will go down and fix everything, not with the Democratic Senate, not with the Democratic House, not with a Senate that was nominally Republican, but by no means Reagan Republican at that point. Reagan was the only Reagan Republican in Washington, D.C. when he got elected. The party changed after.
Well, Grover, if you look at the Republicans today, I'm not sure what I'd classify them as. I don't believe they're Reagan Republicans. A lot of people aren't sure that they're really Republicans in some cases. So would you classify our current, federal legislature in both, Senate and the House are, solid Republican, but on the other hand, they seem to waver when they need to stand hard.
Well, there are two things. One, they have passed the abolition of Obamacare. Obama vetoes it. I don't blame them for not being able to do something that requires two-thirds of both houses, because we don't have two-thirds of the House and Senate to override a veto. To fix Obamacare, you need a Republican president with enough digits to hold a pen and sign the repeal, which the House and Senate have done. I think it's quite true that the Republicans in the House and Senate have a hard time explaining to the American people, look, this is what we're trying to do. This is what Obama does to get in the way. Because that's not the way CBS tells it. And sometimes critics of the House and the Senate, because they don't get to win, and you don't get to win unless you have two-thirds of the House and Senate or the presidency, people say, well, they're not trying. I know these guys. They're trying. Now, is there a challenge which will be with us always? And that is called appropriators. People on the Appropriations Committee who come to Washington, and their job is to spend money. Are Democratic appropriators less destructive to Western civilization than Democratic appropriators? Yes. Are they still a problem? Yes, yes. And Americans for Tax Reform, the group that I run, is running a campaign, which I think will be successful, to have the House and Senate, under Republican leadership, establish an anti-appropriations committee, which is a committee in the House and in the Senate whose only job is to recommend budget cuts. The appropriators recommend how to spend money. This is the opposite of that. These are people who can put on the floor bills that say, let's spend less here, let's spend less there. And the good news is that this is not a fantasy. This is not something that's never happened. We had one of these. During World War II, Harry Byrd, who was back when you had conservative Democrats, he was a conservative Democrat from Virginia, he insisted on setting up this committee, the Committee to Reduce Unnecessary Federal Spending. And the reason that Civilian Conservation Corps thing where they send kids out to cut down trees and stuff, the reason that doesn't exist anymore was the Anti-Appropriations Committee said, we're fighting a war. There's plenty of jobs for young men, got an army, and we got factories. We don't have to have this anymore. It's costing money, and they phased it out. The Works Project Administration, which used to, do Marxist paintings on the sides of post offices because America needed that in the 1930s, they phased that out. So we've actually had success with an appropriations committee that has subpoena power. They can bring people in. What are you doing? Why are you spending money? Why does this make any sense? Knock it off. We close you down. And that, I think, will help allow Republican congressmen and senators to get famous and important and get invited to all the cool parties because they're reducing the size of government rather than the incentives now, which is all the spending interest tell you how handsome you are if you vote to increase spending.
Well, how do we break the pattern of, every politician says, I'm going to go to Washington, or I'm going to go to Beacon Hill or wherever and fight for you and get you everything you deserve. So in one sense, they're sent to the legislature to spend money and spend and get as much government largesse they can in their congressional district, their state rep district, state senate, whatever the district is. Their job is to bring federal dollars into that. And how do you break that mold? How do you break that pattern?
Well, when you elect somebody, you keep in touch with them. When you elect somebody, you ask them to take the pledge not to raise taxes. You ask them to make it clear what their public positions are. It's more difficult for somebody to flip-flop on a position if they've articulated it clearly to the American people, to the people in the state or congressional district, and even better if they put it in writing. The other is keep in touch with them, talk to them, invite them to come to your local party organization, to your local neighborhood, to keep in touch with these politicians, because I assure you, the spending interests get on their knock on their door and come talk to their staff and sometimes to them. They're in D.C. You're not in D.C. You're running your life. The elected officials in D.C. And this town, I'm in Washington right now, if you walk down the street, you see all these huge buildings that were constructed from the monopoly rents of government programs, and then they fill them with people who lobby for more monopoly rents for more government programs so they can build more buildings or at least have better furniture inside the ones that they have. So we're up against a permanent lobby structure interest group for spending, and we're just the American people, but we have votes. And the other one is whenever you're talking to an elected official, speeches are interesting. Speeches are fun. Speeches don't move mountains. Ask them who else they're working with. Politics is a team sport. In the House of Representatives, if you don't have 218 people supporting something, you got nothing. One guy standing up and screaming doesn't do any good. The one guy going and finding 217 friends that he convinces that this is a good idea, let's reduce this bill, let's reduce this tax, then you have power. And elected officials who work well with other children in building the case for freedom are much more useful than elected officials who give wonderful speeches.
We're speaking with Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. He's also a board member of the NRA. And like I said, we just have a couple minutes left. Do we have to be concerned about anything about the greatest gun salesman in the history of the United States, President Barack Obama, pulling any stunts with guns before he gets out of office?
With him, you always have to sleep with one eye open, because if somebody thinks of it and gives him a bad idea, he may well run with it. But so far, we've been able to knock down most of his bad things. Watch Hillary. Hillary, if you go to hightaxhillary.com, the website we put together on all her tax increases, one of them is a 25% tax on gun sales. So if you buy a gun that costs $400, she wants it to be $500 to make it difficult for you to buy a gun to protect yourself and your family.
What's that website once again?
High Tax Hillary, as in Hillary Clinton, hightaxhillary.com. It's got all the different taxes. She's put together at least $1 trillion of tax increases that she admits to, and then there are others that she's mentioned but hasn't put a dollar figure to. I believe that she will lose the presidency because of the gun control issue. And the reason for that is that when she came to power with her husband many years ago, there weren't a lot of people with concealed carry permits. Now, in Massachusetts, there are 250,000 people with a concealed carry permit. My parents have one each, okay? They can carry a gun in their car, in their purse, in their pocket in Massachusetts and across state lines. Massachusetts is one state. There are 13 million Americans with a concealed carry permit, the right to carry a gun on their person through the day. Where do they live? 1.5 million in Florida. What's Florida? Swing state. 1 million in Pennsylvania, swing state. 450,000 in Ohio, swing state. 650,000 in Michigan. So more than 100,000, 200,000 in Colorado. These are all swing states. Hillary's out there insulting gun owners, and she thinks gun owners are elk hunters in Wyoming, right? She thinks they're rural guys, and she doesn't ever meet any of them. And what she doesn't know is a third of the people with concealed carry permits are women in this country.
Grover, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Thanks for taking the moment for us this morning on this Sunday, and we'd love to have you on again.
I would love to rejoin you, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
Let's return to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good Sunday morning, New England. Check those clocks. It is 10:35. If you did not spring forward, time to do. You're tuned to another edition of All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830. The distinguished-looking man sitting across from me, that's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston, and we're joined on the phone in just a second or two by Keiko Oral, who is a state rep out of the 12th Bristol District, which covers Berkeley, Taunton, Lakeville, and Middleborough. And she is running for the Massachusetts State Committee woman to be the national spokesman for the National Committee. And she joins us now on the phone. Good morning, Keiko. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Hey, you and I are both grew up in Cincinnati, so we're both Buckeyes.
Yes.
I do fit the definition of a Buckeye, a worthless nut. So.
Yeah.
But how are you doing this morning? You're a busy woman.
I'm doing very well, and I'm excited about this new day in the Republican Party here in Massachusetts. I think that we need to move in a positive direction, and I have the skills to do that. I'm a social and fiscal conservative, and I'm happy to work with all Republicans to try to grow their parties. I'm excited because I know that we're going to be moving in a different direction. I'm committed to working with people that are not necessarily going to support me on the state committee vote on this. And I'm committed to doing the work that we need to do as a party to unify and grow. I liked what Grover Norquist said in the last segment, where he's saying that politics is a team sport. And I believe that. And I think that we need to be working together to support all elected Republicans.
Keiko, just for the audience, could you explain, you know, the process and when things are going to happen? And I don't want everybody thinking they can go to the ballot box and elect you, although they certainly have down in Lakeville in your district. So if you could just explain the process for folks, I think it'd be useful.
So April 5th, the state committee, which is comprised of 80 members, will be selecting a national committee man and a national committee woman. The state committee is the policy guiding organization for the Massachusetts Republican Party, and so those folks have a very important role in the direction that we move forward. And so, on April 5th, the people will be able to choose whether or not they want to move in a new direction, in a positive direction, and in a direction that's going to grow and unify the party. And I hope that they will support me, and I have the public endorsements that I need to win that vote.
Well, congratulations. I guess, although no elections. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I guess no elections in the bag till it's done, but it does look like you have the support of Charlie Baker, the most popular governor in the United States right now. So that's a big step.
Well, and I think that they're, you know, that I understand the divide that's been going on for the past few months, and especially the concern with, you know, with Governor Baker, and but I feel like I've experienced in the legislature within our caucus as far as this push to get things done, and people are thinking that Governor Baker is absolutely getting things done, and he's not only working with Republicans, he's working with everyone. And that's where I think he's been so popular, because he's focused on problem solving. And that's, I've served under a Democrat governor, and I've served under Governor Baker. And by far, Governor Baker it's much easier to be effective in the state house.
Well, it's interesting. I read an article in Globe recently that they were actually being critical of Governor Baker having dinner with a bunch of Democrats. And I'm kind of thinking, well, wait a minute. Isn't that how you know, get things done? You sit down, you break bread, you know, have a glass of wine with these folks. You discuss things that need to be done. You figure out where everybody's mindset is. That's how you get to the middle ground. Just, I don't understand the criticism. I'm thinking, well, go, Charlie. You know, have dinner with them every night, for Christ's sakes, because guess what? The majority of the legislators in this state are Democrats. So it makes sense to have dinner with them and lunch and chat with them, because if you're going to get anything done, you got to get it through a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House. So, I
think that's what Gerber was alluding to, in that you have to be able to treat people as people and not as parties, and try to look at the ideas and look at the solving of the problems versus just solely focusing on, you know, beating people up. I think we need to be we have to have more of a focus on problem solving. So I've seen that I've been able to be a social and fiscal conservative. I've been able to work with Democrats and not compromise my principles. And I have a voting record to back that up. And I think that's where, you know, I can sit down with the Democrats, but I can bring my perspective to the table, and I do that effectively. And I think that this National Committee Woman spot is an excellent place to change our brand as Republicans to a positive brand of one that's moving forward, that's problem solving. I am a regular person who is participating in the media. I think we need to have a brand switch as far as I'm concerned, to grow and unify the party.
Well, there you go. We're speaking with Keiko Orrell. She is currently a Massachusetts state rep out of the 12th Bristol District, covering Berkeley, Taunton, Lakeville in the Middleborough area. She is up for election for Mass GOP National Committee Woman, and that vote will take place on April 5th, but endorsed by Governor Charlie Baker. Is there anything else the public needs to know? I mean, about the Mass...
Well, I think that what people are seeing at the federal level is an utter divide within our party. And so that on a micro level is what's happening here within the state. We need to get together. We as a Republican Party need to get together if we're going to keep the corner office here in Massachusetts and keep the and get the corner office at the federal level. And so that's my mission, is to grow and unify the party, reach out to millennials, reach out to establishment, so-called establishment, reach out to the grassroots. I come from the grassroots. And so that's where I think that we have to have someone who's able and willing to support all elected Republicans, including our governor, and use that popularity to try to grow our brand. And people want to be around people who are solving problems and getting things done.
Hey, Keiko, one of my favorite Republicans in Massachusetts is on the phone, Mindy McKenzie Herbert, and I think she wants to join in on the conversation. Good morning, Mindy. How are you? Mindy?
I'm here.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Mindy. How are you? Do you have any thoughts on Keiko? Hello?
Oh, we're having a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Okay. Yes, I can hear you perfectly. I just want to say thank you to Keiko for running, because we need Keiko to go to the National Committee and take the Massachusetts Modern Republican brand and help the RNC. So I just want to thank you for running, Keiko, because, I know we've been friends for a while since you first ran, and, it's that type of vibrancy, the conservative, fiscal conservative and social conservative, but one that wants to get things done. And you're a breath of fresh air. So thank you so much for running. We need you.
Well, I appreciate that. And I am running because I believe in public service, and I believe that we are at a crisis within our state and within the country as far as the Republican brand. And we need to change our brand to being one of can do. We can do it. We're problem solvers. We can get along. And I think that's where I have seen success in the legislature, and I hope to bring that to the state committee and the national committee.
Absolutely. And John, just so you know, whenever we were running, whenever we were supporting Governor, then candidate Baker, now Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito, I was head of the Women for Charlie effort statewide. And the message that Lauren Baker and Karen Polito heard, coffee after coffee and conversation in living rooms and meetings throughout the state, was exactly what Keiko is talking about. Was, we want to be a positive brand. We're tired of fighting over issues that have already been settled law. Let's move on. Let's be a party of embracing all women, children, our youth, rather, my children. My children are in praise of what we did with changing the platform as far as having the minority opinion on the Republican platform 2 years ago, because we knew that, the young Republicans, my kids' ages, are saying, please, let's leave the social issues out of the platform. Let's focus on what unifies us as a party. So I know that that's going to be heard, and that's why I'm supporting Keiko, and I know a good number of all of my friends on state committee are supporting Keiko as well.
Well, there you go. We're joined by Keiko Orrell and Mindy McKenzie Herbert. I know, Keiko, you've got a busy day today, so we're going to let you go. Mindy, thank you for calling in. And we'll have to have you back on after April 5th, and we'll talk about it.
Very good. Thank you so much, John.
Everybody have a great weekend. Thank you. You're tuned to All Politics here on WCRN 830. We're going to take a quick break. And Don and Stoughton, we're coming to you next.
You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts. On New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good morning, New England. 10:48. Check those clocks. Make sure you sprung ahead. You're tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830. What an action-packed show we've had so far. We had Grover Norquist from Americans for Tax Reform on in the first half hour. And we were just joined by Keiko Orrell and Mindy Herbert from the Massachusetts State Committee talking about Keiko running for Massachusetts GOP National Committee Woman. So it's been an action-packed morning. One of my favorite callers is on the phone, Don from Stoughton. He wants to talk about what Grover Norquist was talking about, taxing firearms. Good morning, Don. How are you?
Good morning, John and Terry. How are you gentlemen doing?
Good morning. Nice to hear from you.
Is it true? true that the two of you moved here from out of state?
Yes, that is true.
Was North Korea full? You couldn't get into there, or what?
Well, you have to experience Massachusetts, you know. Of course you do, yes. Yeah, it's tough. You know, I'm a Midwest country boy. I'll just speak for myself. I had a hard time adjusting to Taxachusetts, the overregulation, the taxes. Why do we have to pay these tolls? Why? You know, what's an override? You know, I had a hard time.
Liberty.
Well, I moved here so long ago. It was before Prop 2.5 override, and it dropped my taxes a couple $100 a year. My real estate taxes when it passed through.
Temporary sales tax of 1962 of Governor Volpe of only 2 cents, a temporary tax, as is the excise tax on private automobiles. But, welcome here. Get your head examined.
I've only lived here about 43 years, so, you know, I'm not exactly a newcomer. I'm originally from Oklahoma, which coincidentally, one of our U.S. Senators here from Massachusetts is from the same city I was born in. We're both from Oklahoma City.
Yeah, the Indian Territories, I understand.
Well, it used to be Indian Territory, but quite honestly, I don't know where in her heritage, she's American Indian, but I can certainly attest to my heritage. And if you ever met my grandmother, which would be a challenge, you'd see that somewhere in there there's some a lot of Indian heritage. So.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
But, Don, you know, I used to be a former chairman of the Board of Selectmen in my town, and every year, you know, the budget woes, oh, this and that. And I just used to scratch my head and go, what are you guys talking about? This is easy. Let's just fix. Oh, we have to do an override. Why? Well, because this. You know, we cut these many programs. Yeah, but how many programs did we add? Do the math, guys. It's simple math. It's not, you know. So I think Common Core math got into Massachusetts politics long before it got into the school systems.
Yeah. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. But, yeah, picking up with Grover Norquist and what Hillary wants to do in taxes and that, I know a lot of people are going with this insanity of a flat tax, a one-page tax return, etc. Now, I heard a gentleman talk on air a couple of months ago stating that if we just tax the transfer of securities, let's say the Federal Reserve Bank, J.P. Morgan, all of these large brokerages who trade money back and forth, if we just put a half a penny on the $1,000 trillion worth of traded securities, that would raise $5 trillion without taking a single penny out of the paycheck of wage earners. How wonderful that is. And imagine if the identity of J.P. Morgan was stolen, guys. Can you imagine somebody trying to go in and get a credit card? Yeah, I'm J.P. Morgan. How ludicrous that is, and how simple and refined a system it would be if we collected taxes as a tariff or excise tax on the trading of securities. Everybody, all the workers would be able to keep more of their money. They'd be able to invest it. And guess what would happen to the brokerage houses in that? They'd get bigger because more people had money to invest. And a worker would be going home with, I don't know, 96, 97% of their wages, just Social Security and maybe some local taxes taken out. And nobody, guys, would have to worry about April 15th ever again.
Well, there are some people talking about a financial tax or tax on every financial transaction. In other words, if you went to the bank and cashed your check, it's some percent and you'd get charged and on and on. I guess I'm not very happy to hear about something in that vein. I haven't done enough research to think a tax on financial transactions is worthwhile because it's a hidden tax. So I tend to think I'm not happy about it. I think taxes need to be painful for people a little bit, or not painful, but certainly in front of them all the time.
Well, I know what you're saying, and yes, the taking the taxes directly off the transfer of securities, but the people would kind of recognize it in the fact that they're coming home with a bigger paycheck, and any tax they then received upon their earnings would scream out to them with fire and damnation. And they'd say, wait a second, how is it you people don't get enough money from taxing the trade of these securities? Why now are you coming here? And I think that would even be more glaring than paying taxes. I mean, our tax system is so bad, not even King George III would tax the colonists in the manner that we're being taxed now, guys. This is insane. It's a Fred Flintstone Stone Age tax system.
Well, the problem is you've got almost half of America living off the dole in some way or another. Of course, when Mitt Romney shared that without knowing it, everybody was up in arms. But the reality is that almost half of America is somehow receiving government assistance.
Right. There is no incentive, and I see more and more businesses going out of business. I mean, I read the papers on a daily basis, and one of the biggest situations is that small businesses, nearly 50% of them are just breaking even, and some are actually losing money. Small business. Now, this is where, you know, Mr. Obama comes out and pounds his chest and tells us how great everybody is doing. And then on top of that, this Obamacare is an abomination beyond belief. I mean, we can't believe that you're being forced to pay taxes for people who don't pay any taxes at all, who get free health care, but if you don't get it, you'll be fined. And that's constitutional. Excuse me?
Yeah, I agree. Well, the problem is, what do you replace it with? Because in one sense, the cat's out of the bag. We have a path right now toward really national health care, not unlike England and a number of European states. But
Cuba? I understand Cuba has free health care, guys.
Yeah, but is it, you know, how many people live?
Yeah, no. And lastly, regarding Hillary Clinton putting a tax on the exercise of a right, the U.S. Supreme Court in 1940 threw in a case called Murdoch, M-U-D-O-C-K, stated emphatically that you cannot charge a tax, a fee, or a license upon the exercise of a right. Even newspapers and other publications, you cannot tax the paper and ink that they purchase. There is no sales or excise tax that you can charge because it's a tax on a right. So for Hillary to take and tax firearms is insanity beyond insanity. I mean, she is stupid beyond stupid to say something like that.
Well, honestly, she's going to say whatever she needs to get your vote.
Exactly.
So if you think about her filtering system, it's what does this audience want to hear? And it doesn't matter whether it's the bankers at Wells Fargo or Bank of America or whatever, or Goldman Sachs, or is it, you know, Joe the plumber out in Columbus, Ohio? She's going to say whatever she needs to say. She goes through this filtering process. The truth isn't in her filtering process, by the way. So there we go.
Yeah, no. Let me leave you with this last point. I remember seeing a number of years ago a bumper sticker on a car, and it was down in Cape Cod, and it said, and I quote, "Vote Democrat, it's easier than thinking."
Hey, Don.
I fell on the ground laughing.
Don, that is so true. Hey, before you go, because we just got a couple minutes till the top of the hour, what do you think of the media's coverage of the Trump stuff over the weekend?
You know, it's been funny. I've been watching it, and I've noticed how biased the news media is. Believe it or not,
just
guys,
now?
Yeah, I know, huh? How about that? Believe it or not, the very people who believe in diversity, you know, Black Lives Matter, free the Mexicans, and all this other stuff, they are the very same people that don't want Donald Trump or any conservatives to speak out. And that's their form of diversity. And it's a joke. It's a blatant joke. And it is one of the most blatant violations of the First Amendment, which they want to exercise, but they want to make Donald Trump shut up on.
Yeah, I've been very public. I'm not the biggest supporter of Donald Trump. I have my concerns about him. But what I don't think the liberal media is understanding is every time they go after him, they're helping him. Donald Trump supporters don't watch CNN. They don't watch Fox News. They're hard working. They're at work. They're going to vote for Trump no matter what. And if he's keeping his name in the news, they're just doing him a favor. It's kind of funny.
No, you're exactly right. And it's funny. The Chicago police said that, well, we didn't tell Mr. Trump to cancel his appearance, when Trump is saying exactly the opposite, that the police told him that they could not take and guarantee anybody's safety. Well, that goes back to 1855. When a banker from Massachusetts tried to sue a sheriff in Maryland, the banker went down to take a bankrupt property. He was kidnapped and extorted at $2,500. When he went to sue the sheriff, the U.S. Supreme Court said, no law enforcement guarantees anybody's safety in the United States of America. You're on your own. And then you saw the riots after the Chicago meeting with Trump was canceled. You saw the streets outside. Those were all the people who believe in diversity and the First Amendment.
There you go. That's Don from Stoughton, keeping it real. Thanks, Don.
All right, guys. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
All right, you're tuned to All Politics is Local. Check those clocks. It is 10:59. You're tuned to All Politics is Local. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll be back on the other side. I'm wrestling with the line.